thank you for tuning in. I am going to be shortly joined on the line by the guy who's looking after the communications for Inner City Helping Homeless. Inner City Helping Homeless is probably one of Ireland's leading charities at the moment because it's giving lots of support. And I'm joined by Brian McLaughlin on the line. Brian, good morning.
Morning, Shane. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Good, thanks.
Busy, I would imagine, on this wet morning.
Yeah, it's getting busier. The bigger the homeless problem gets, the more busy we are. So it is one of those things that go hand in hand. But, you know, we're doing it for the reasons that we want to see an end to homelessness and we want to support the people that are affected by it. So it's something you get used to doing, and it's one of those things that, you know, you have to believe in what you're doing, and there's certainly a lot of belief in wanting to end homelessness in this country, which is why we do what we do.
Wow, amazing. Brian, tell us your story. You got involved with Inner City Helping Homeless how long ago?
So just over 4 years ago, myself and one of my friends, kind of, there had been a situation where we had seen a couple of deaths on the street. So myself and one of my friends decided to do a close appeal in Lucan, where we both live, for a homeless charity. So we went looking to see what charity we'd do it for, and because of the fact that ICHH had no government funding and didn't pay any salaries, we decided that we'd do the close appeal for ICHH. So we basically advertised it in the local area, in local newspapers and Facebook pages and so forth, and the van from ICHH came out to us. We got a full van load of clothes that morning. So in the course of talking to the people that had come out to us, you know, I decided I would try outreach just for one night, or so I thought. I went out and did the one night on outreach with ICHH, and I've been there ever since.
Okay. And how has it been?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things we've seen, I mean, the problem has evolved in the time I've been there. Like, we've seen a huge jump in the number of people that are homeless, and to be honest, the most scary statistic is the number of children that are now homeless across the country. As I say, I kind of went into it to do one night only, but that first night out in the street really changed me. It changed my outlook on a lot of things. And like, one of the things that really struck me that particular night was we were walking down Henry Street and there was a man sleeping in a doorway, or settling down for the night in the doorway, and the team tried to give him a sandwich and, you know, a cup of tea and a few bits like that, and the man refused to take the sandwich. And the reason he was refusing was he said he had eaten something at lunchtime that day, and we might meet someone that needed that sandwich more than he did. And that generosity of spirit absolutely floored me, because it was my first night out, and to see someone that had eaten, you know, 9 or 10 hours previously, but had the thought process to think, well, actually someone else mightn't have eaten all day, so I don't want to take that sandwich.
Wow.
That really was something that changed my outlook, because, you know, I was in the corporate world for a long time, and if we had a day where there was a free donut or a free muffin or something like that, you had a few hundred people in a line trying, you know, to get their free donut or their free muffin. But here was a guy that was actually bedding down in a doorway on Henry Street in September, so it wasn't exactly a good time of year weather-wise, but was actually thinking of other people. So the team leader on the night actually had to have a back and forth with him for about 3 or 4 minutes before he agreed to accept the sandwich. You know, we had to assure him that we had enough supplies and we could ring the van if we needed more supplies, and eventually he took it. But that particular scenario and that particular incident
really opened your eyes.
Me for a long time. It really did. It showed me that, you know, there's a lot of generalizations about people, particularly people maybe that are sleeping out on the streets, and it really showed me that it's not what people think it is.
Okay. Brian, tell us, so what are like the main challenges that you would face regularly doing what you do?
I suppose we'd have a number of challenges, really, Shane, in that regard. I mean, obviously, we advocate very, very strongly for on behalf of these people. So whether that's meetings in the Dáil, whether it's in the press, whether it's in the information we put out ourselves on our social media platforms, I think the biggest frustration that we have has been the lack of political will from the government to build proper homes for families and individuals on the scale that's required to address the problem. But I suppose from a more frontline perspective, you know, what we do, we couldn't do without the volunteers. I mean, there is no ICHH if we didn't have the volunteer base that we have.
Okay.
We're working all day long between, you know, from our office on Amiens Street, we're giving out food parcels, we're giving out clothes orders, we're giving out toiletry packs, we're giving out food from 10 o'clock in the morning right up until the teams go out at 11 p.m. But the biggest challenge we have is trying to get people, I suppose, to realise that the wider scale people to understand that this is a homeless crisis, but hand in hand it's a housing crisis. And the housing crisis doesn't just affect the 10,500 people that are quote unquote officially homeless in the country. there's a lot of people that are couch surfing, that are sharing six and eight people into one two-bedroom apartment or three-bedroom apartment. So the housing crisis itself is a much bigger issue, and they go hand in hand together. So I suppose one of the things we really try and do regularly is to try and tell people that this issue might not affect you today, but it could affect you tomorrow, or it could affect your children tomorrow.
That's the
or
frightening
your grandchildren
thing.
Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So Brian, since you started, okay, all them many years ago, I'm sure you've seen lots of different, you know, stories. I'm sure you've got lots of experience in the industry. Do you think that it's like getting worse rapidly and it's moving really, really fast?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's escalating nearly month on month. You know, over the course of a year, you might have one or two months where the figures either kind of stabilise or drop ever so slightly. But aside of that, it's just going up every single month. Like between 2015 and now, we saw an increase of over 400% in the number of children that are homeless. And that's the scary statistic, because those children are all living in bed and breakfasts, hotels, family homes, and you don't see them on the street. They're not visible to everybody. But we've had a lot of those families and a lot of those children come through our office.
Okay.
And that's the saddest part. And that's the thing that really can get you the most, because you're hearing children that have come from school. And one of the things that always gets me is around this time of year when Christmas is approaching. And, you know, I've spoken to parents where their child has written a couple of letters to Santa, and the first couple of letters from Santa, the only thing they're asking for is a home. And as we all know, Santa can't give you a home. Unfortunately, Santa looks after toys. And their parent has to have that discussion with them and say, Santa can't do that. He wants to give you toys, but he can't get you a home. So things like that would really break your heart, because children are so innocent and they need a proper home to be able to develop both physically and mentally. And to have them all living in one room in a bed and breakfast or a hotel for up as long as 2 or 3 years, it's not
it can
fair.
Be soul
not
destroying.
A fair society.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I mean, Shane, one thing I'd say to you and your listeners, the Ombudsman for Children released a report back around March this year, where they went in and spoke to the children from 4 up to 17 that are in emergency accommodation, and to hear in their own words what the life is like for those children in the emergency accommodation would both break your heart, but also it drives you forward nearly to keep fighting the fight that we're doing, because these are the future of this country. And if we let them down now, what are they going to think about the rest of the country come 10 years' time? You know, we have to stand up now and fight
makes
for these
sense.
Children and fight for the newborn babies and the children that are going to come over the next couple of years.
I understand. Brian, it seems like you do a lot and you sound extremely enthusiastic, but what empowers you to keep going? Because I'm sure you have days where you think, oh, this is just getting tougher, or you might have a really difficult case and you might say, God, this is really getting me. You know, so what empowers you to actually keep going?
It's probably a number of things that keep us going, to be honest with you, Shane. I mean, as I say, the likes of families coming into our office and hearing their stories firsthand, or individuals, adults coming to the office and hearing their stories and hearing what they're going through, that can empower you to keep fighting the good fight. And, you know, another thing that can get you down, I suppose, to a point would be when elections come around and, you know, you look at the results and you hope that people are going to realise that the current government and Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are a huge part of this problem, and Labour, for that matter, have led us to where we are now. So, you know, we need change in this country, and, you know, I certainly wouldn't be telling anyone who to vote for, but I would certainly, you know, look at people and say, are you really going to vote the same people in that have got us to this position in the first place? So things like that, when you see election results, can deflate you a bit, where you think, can people not see that these are the people that are causing this problem, and yet they vote them in again? So things like that, or if we had, for example, a Raise the Roof, you know, homeless demonstration in town, and maybe the numbers are 10,000, 15,000, but they're nowhere near where they were for the water charges. Things like that can maybe temporarily deflate you a little bit, but what keeps us all going is each other, you know, the fellow volunteers. When you see the other people in the office and the work that they do and the work that we've all done together as a team, that can push you forward. You could be having a bad day, but everyone else can drag you back up with them, and that's what we need to do.
And you need support.
To support each other.
Do you have much support in what you do?
Absolutely. I mean, we're a team there, and I think that's the way it's been for the last 3 years. As far as I'm concerned, you know, we couldn't do it without each other, but the principal thing that keeps us going is the volunteers. I mean, the volunteers that come in and go out on the street every single night, that rallied around yesterday when the weather was so bad and came in at first thing in the morning and spent the whole day there and going out on the streets. So you need that empowerment and support from the people around you, because
so it's a collective.
We're all aiming. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it's a collective, because I think one of the things that we say regularly, and I think that's absolutely true, we can hold our hand in our heart and say we would love to close the doors of ICHH and say there is no homeless problem, there is no need for you guys anymore, and we could go back to our normal lives and walk away from it, because to us, we're doing it to support these people, and if those people didn't need support, we're not needed anymore, and that's what we would aim for. That's the end game for us. Unfortunately, with a lot of other charities in the sector, it is a bit of an industry, it is a big business, and maybe the drive is not there to actually end it. You know, it's more about sustaining. But I think for us, we're looking at the bigger picture. We want to see an end to the homeless problem. We want to look at other countries like Finland that have pretty much eradicated homelessness, particularly street homelessness. We look at countries like that and we say, they can do it. Why can't we do it? It's not as hard as people are making out.
We can.
100%.
Absolutely. Brian, just tell me a little bit about Inner City Helping Homeless for anybody listening and they're a little unsure.
Yeah, so ICHH was started in November 2013. It was started in the North Inner City by a local group that just decided to go out on the street one night and support the people that were sleeping rough, as they had kind of noticed a big increase in the number of people sleeping out at night. So on the first night, they met in Lloyd's Pub on Amien Street. A shout out was put out on Facebook and over 50 volunteers turned up, and actually on the first night there was more volunteers than there was people sleeping on the streets. And it started as a one night only thing, and within a couple of months it was gone to 3 and 4 nights a week. Within 6 months they had their first premises and had gone to 7 days a week, and the charity has just kept going from there. But I suppose what we've really changed in the last couple of years was we would have primarily, outreach will always be our first part of call. That's 7 night a week service. It's how we started, and it will always have that service available. But over time, we've kind of increased what we've done and how we support people into the likes of, we have now a European feed grant and a partnership with Food Cloud. So every month we get a donation of non-perishable food, so we can do, you know, parcels of food for families and individuals that maybe are living under the poverty line and give them enough groceries to keep them going for a few days or a week. We also, as I say, we moved into the likes of clothes orders. We moved into advocacy and case management support. We've had situations over the last couple of years. I believe last year we spent approximately €40,000 on accommodating families that came to us late at night that home services had nothing for. So their alternative option was to go and sleep in a Garda station with children. And we have stepped in numerous occasions and found accommodation ourselves and put them in. And just that alone, even just taking that pressure off a family to say, you don't have to go down to Star Street now with your children and sleep there. And just to be able to alleviate that pressure from families has been something that we take pride in, but we don't believe in red tape. You know, if a family turn up on your doorstep, it doesn't matter to us what the circumstances are or if they've had a chance to go and register as homeless yet or what the situation is. It's black and white to us. Children should not be sleeping in a Garda station. People should not be walking the streets with children like that. So we will always step in and try and
give them somewhere safe to go.
Protect those people and just make sure they have somewhere to go, exactly.
That is important. Would you see the same people reoccurring?
To a certain point, yeah. I mean, there's obviously people that are in the system, you know, whether it's a six-month bed or when they're on the one-night-only thing. So you get relationships built. You get a lot of people that come to our door that we know on a first-name basis. And they become part of your family as well. They become the people that you kind of know, used to seeing around the place and used to seeing coming to the door. And, you know, we get to the stage where if someone doesn't come to the door for a week, we start asking questions, we start getting worried, where are they, are they okay, you know, what's happened that we're not seeing them anymore. So it is a case where we are a family in ICHH, you know, that's something I firmly believe in. We have to be loyal to each other, because without each other, we're not going to be able to do what we do. But that family circle can extend out to the people that we also support. So, you know, it's something to be very proud of, and I think something that all of our volunteers, not just the people maybe that are the likes of myself or Anthony or the people that are on the radio stations or are in the papers, we're standing over a big team. Like there's a huge amount of people that are behind us, and we're all together as one supportive unit. And if we didn't have each other, there wouldn't be an ICHH.
Okay. So the overall picture here, hopefully one day, is to put a stop to this, to kind of end it all. What is it going to take?
Well, for the biggest thing it's going to take is political will, and we haven't had that up to now in the last 6 years. I think something that everyone is well aware of, the rental prices in the country, particularly in Dublin, are absolutely out of control at the moment. And, you know, we want to see a situation where not only are we building social houses for people that are on the housing list, but proper affordable homes. And when I say affordable, there's a lot of talk over Auderney Gardens and what the minister and the department classified as affordable. Now, their definition of affordable was a joint combined wage of €109,000 a year and a €42,000 in savings. That is not affordable to a lot of people in this country. So I think we need proper affordable housing for people that are maybe earning €25,000 to €50,000 that can't afford to buy in this current market or can't afford to pay, say, €2,000 a month in rent. So we need to be looking at the much bigger picture. And I think a building programme led by local authorities is step one in that for sure.
Interesting. So for anyone listening and like they want to get involved, or they think, God, I'd love to be a little help in there, or I'd love to volunteer, what must they do?
So anyone looking to volunteer can get in touch with Anne, who's our volunteer coordinator, and she'll be on volunteering@ICHH.ie or our landline, which is 01888 1804. But because we're open all day from 10 in the morning till 11 at night, you know, if people don't want to go out on the street and do the street outreach part late at night, we still need volunteers throughout the day. We have volunteers coming in, sorting clothes for us, you know, making sandwiches for outreach that day, you know, going out and doing deliveries and collections for us. So we are running all day on volunteers. So anyone that wants to get involved volunteering, absolutely reach out to us. And I suppose one thing that I always say to people as well is that the charity sector over the last number of years in this country has had a lot of problems with, as we know, a lot of corruption in certain some of the charities. So I suppose one thing that we say to people is we can't survive without money, that goes without saying. But if people don't want to give money to charity, go out and spend the money on food, go out and spend the money on sleeping bags, go out and spend the money on hats and scarves and gloves. Go out and give us the stuff that we bring out on the street every single night, because that's as good as money to us.
Okay.
So people can do food appeals in their local areas. They can do secondhand clothes appeals in their local areas. So there's a number of ways people can help us without necessarily having to go on the front line if that's something that they don't want to do. But I would always say to people, at least try outreach one night just to see what goes on.
And you know what? I believe that we can't judge until we kind of see it with our own two eyes, because sometimes you kind of hear, oh, do you know what, she's homeless because of A, B, or C. But then when you actually understand it and you see it, you get a whole different perspective. And, you know, that's really important, because I think we're all too quick to have a little bit of judgment or put our own opinion on things. And, you know, let's face it, we're never right. So it's always good
to... Yeah, I think that's, further to that point, I think, Shane, one of the things that consistently gets fed back to us from a person that's done their very first night in outreach, they can't get over how appreciative the people that are sleeping out are of a simple food bag and a cup of tea. But it's not just about that. It's also about empathy and compassion. Someone having a conversation with them, looking them in the eye, asking them how they are, how their day went. Those things, we've often met people that have spoken to nobody from one end of the day to the other. So that interaction, that human interaction with someone that actually cares and is out there, not because they're paid, but because they want to try and make that little bit of a difference. And that interaction can mean so much to the people that are homeless. You know, it really can. And we constantly hear things like, you're earth angels, and, you know, we can't survive without you guys. For someone that's new volunteering, that can sometimes take their breath away, because they're thinking, I'm only giving up a couple of hours of my day and my week here, and the appreciation that I'm getting back for it. So I think it is something that people have to kind of maybe try and experience once. But as I say, there's a number of ways to support charities like ourselves. If the front line is not for you, there's plenty of other ways you can support us.
There's no excuses, Brian. If you want to get involved, there's always something for somebody, always a little role. Listen, Brian, thanks a million. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. You're doing a fantastic job, and more power to you. If only we had more people like you on the front lines giving us our voice.
Said, we couldn't do it without a team around us. You know, that's the thing about ICHH. It's not one person, it's not two people, it's 200 people that keep it going 7 days a week. And without those people, we wouldn't have the charity or be able to support the amount of people that we do. So thanks to all of them.
So it's a team.
Without them, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. Yeah.
Brilliant. Listen, best of luck in your work. Well done. You're doing an amazing job. So from us
thanks
all,
lot, at really appreciate it.
Near FM, keep up the good work, and thanks a mil.
Thank you.
All right. Cheers. Thanks. That was Brian there from Inner City Helping Homeless. They do fantastic work, and I think if you want to get involved, don't think twice, just go and do it and kind of get a little idea of your own perspective before you judge, because let's face it, you know, we're all only one decision away from being homeless, and that's the real truth behind it. You know, it mightn't be you today, but it could be you tomorrow. So well done to the team there in Inner City Helping Homeless.